My name is Conrad Steiner. I'm a doctor of medicine. Tonight's story has the title, White is the Color.
Guardian of birth, healer of the sick, comforter of the aged. And the qualities of the worthy physician are three: the eye of an eagle, the heart of a lion, the hand of a woman.
This was in 1954. As you saw in this small clip, the doctor was always represented as being perfect. He was ethical, he was caring, he loved patients. He has absolutely no defaults, and everybody loved him. But these things changed, and if you look at today's drama, the representation of the doctor changed a lot. And I will try during this conference to show you how and why it did so. So this doctor that you just saw made it all possible for all diseases, and he was like the savior. He was in a kind of fight with one evil called the disease, and everybody loved him. But things changed maybe in the 70s, because since 1930 till the 70s, all the dramas were almost the same. And one detail, what happened is that all the medical associations were here to guide and sometimes to approve these medical dramas. So we were on the same side as TV. But one war changed all. The Vietnam War made the American people and maybe the world lose their trust in the system. And part of the system was the medical health system. And this was directly translated in another series called MASH. I don't know if some of you would recall MASH. These were a bunch of guys, doctors, in the Korean War that helped people, sometimes on both fronts. So they sometimes help Korean and sometimes they help American. And they were always fighting with the system represented by the American army. So it was the first time when we saw that TV would see the doctor still as ethical, as the helper, as courageous on the front, and would see now the evil in the disease always, but in the health care system too. So it was a honeymoon for us physicians. But will this honeymoon last forever? The answer is no. Things changed. So how is the physician represented today in 2017? There is a lot of medical dramas on TV. But if you want to see one of the medical dramas that would represent it all, I would go and choose Dr. House. I'm sure a lot of you are really fan of Dr. House. And who is Dr. House for people that won't know him? Maybe I will let him introduce himself. But before I would do so, just let me put you in the context. Dr. House, in the first two episodes of the first season, we understand that he's a genius guy, that he knows everything about everything in medicine, but hates patients. So he will try always not to see the patient and resolve the case. So he's always with the intern, residents, sometimes physician, discussing the case, but he won't see any patient. So one of his colleagues, who happens to be the director of the hospital, obliges him to go to the outpatient clinic, and at some point, he tells him, I want you to do your job. And he goes there, and look how he introduces himself.
Hello, sick people and their loved ones. In the interest of saving time and avoiding a lot of boring chit-chat later, I'm Dr. Gregory House. You can call me Greg. I'm one of three doctors staffing this clinic this morning.
Short, sweet, grab a file.
This ray of sunshine is Dr. Lisa Cuddy. Dr. Cuddy runs this whole hospital, so unfortunately she's much too busy to deal with you. I am a board certified diagnostician with a double specialty of infectious disease and nephrology. I'm also the only doctor currently employed at this clinic who's forced to be here against his will. That is true, isn't it? But not to worry, because for most of you, this job could be done by a monkey with a bottle of Motrin. Speaking of which, if you're particularly annoying, you may see me reach for this. This is Vicodin. It's mine. You can't have any. And no, I do not have a pain management problem. I have a pain problem. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm too stoned to tell. So, who wants me?
So, you saw how he introduced himself. What can we deduce from his introduction? One, he doesn't like a lot of boring chit-chat, so he doesn't like to talk to patients. He didn't hesitate to criticize the system, the health system, saying that Dr. Cuddy runs this whole hospital, but unfortunately, she doesn't have any time to deal with you. He is here against his will, so no motivation whatsoever to see the patients, and he may be stoned. What else would he say? He would say, I feel nothing, and it feels great. So no empathy whatsoever. For him, humanity is overrated. And if you noticed, he didn't really define himself as a physician, as a doctor, as a medical doctor. He said, I'm a diagnostician. What is a diagnostician? Did you ever hear about the diagnostician? And when you see really in the series, what in what department he is? He's not in internal medicine department. We understood he has a double board in nephrology and something else. But actually, he's the head of the diagnostic department. Do anybody know something about a diagnostic department somewhere in the world? I don't. And what he says, that he's a technical guy. He knows information, he's smart, he knows a lot of technology. So he's a kind of bond between knowledge, technology, and the patient. And maybe that this sentence is really the best to describe his job. He says, treating illnesses is why we became doctor. Treating patients is what makes most doctors miserable. So that's what he says all day. But why would we care what Dr. House would say? This is just TV, and isn't TV just entertainment? Unfortunately, or maybe sometimes fortunately, the answer is no. TV is not just entertainment. TV influences people. And the only question is, how would TV influence people? In the early 30s, it was easy. TV was trying to inject information in our brains, and it worked. Why it worked? Because public has no resistance, and they were here just to receive direct infusion of media messages. This is called, and is still called, propaganda. And propaganda was used a lot by the Nazi system that we know, but was used a lot by the U.S. government too. And if we go to the ex-Soviet Union, we can see that Stalin killed people twice, once with a gunshot, and once by erasing their head from any picture that could be shown to the public. So propaganda was really what TV and media were doing. Everything was still the same till the 70s. I don't know if you know Orson Welles. Orson Welles is one of the most acclaimed directors of all times, the director of Citizen Kane. So Orson Welles, who was funny and intelligent and a bit of a revolutionary, decided one day to go on the radio and to broadcast that there was an alien attack from another planet on the United States. What did that do? It was a tremendous, tremendous panic among the American citizens. Why did he do so? He was funny, yeah, but he had a most, let's say, noble mission. What he wanted to say is that you should be more aware, more critical toward what you hear and toward what you watch. And after this wake-up call to the American citizens, there was a lot of research about how would media influence people, how does this thing really, really function. And maybe to summarize everything in a single slide, in a single sentence, they understood that by the 70s, people were not really passive and just waiting for infusion of information in their head, because people were receiving a lot of
information from many media providers, and they became more critical. So they were more relying on their interactions between each other. So they were going, talking to each other, calling themselves, calling each other on phones, and media had to do more effort in order to influence people. So what are the prevailing theories right now? How would today's TV influence people? There's a lot of theories about how it would do, but maybe the most important one, yet really the most insidious, sneaky one, is called cultivation. What is cultivation? TV would make you really a bit confused between what is reality and what you perceive. So you always think that what you perceive is reality, and it changes a lot. So that's what the social researchers would call the mean world syndrome. If you go on the TV, you see the violence, the rapes, the aggression, the wars. You would think that we are living in a much more mean world than the real world is right now. Does this mean world syndrome apply to the medical field? Actually, if you watch the medical series, it's fun. And most of the time, you would think everything is all right. And to be honest with you, I love series. And I watch a lot of series. But let me share with you this feeling that at the end of each episode, as doctors, I don't know if you feel this, we always have this impression that there's did something wrong. It was fun, they are glorious, but something went wrong. Luckily, some researchers decided to go and see if there's really something wrong in these series. And they decided in this particular research to see if there's any bioethical or professionalism problem. And actually, you would be surprised to see that in one, just one season of Grey's Anatomy and House together, you would see 49 times in the United States, not here, where they did things on patients without their consent. You would see 22 times when they were way, 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 way beyond the guidelines and what we usually do, beyond the standard, gold standard way of treating patients. And if we go really deeper to see what kind of problem there is, there were 78 times when there's problem with respect to other colleagues or to the patient. And there's a funny number in here. There were 69 times when there was some sexual misconduct. And really, I didn't put this number. It is really in here. So if we go further, when we see 50 episodes of Grey's Anatomy, if we take 100 medical choices, only 43% of these choices were really the good ones, and the remainder were wrong. So what would someone that would be watching this have as an idea about what we do in our hospital? In 60% of the time, we are wrong. Sometimes we're wrong, we're not perfect, but not 60% of the time. I would say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but people would think we are wrong in 60% of the time. Is this all? Not really. Sometimes medical drama give bad information about how we treat some diseases. And one in particular, like seizure, if you see in many Grey's Anatomy, what happens when there's seizure, they will put him a gedel inside his mouth. And we know that that wasn't what we should do. They may choke on it. So people may be back at their home if it happens with them. That's the only medical data they know. And one more thing, and that's really, really very important. You all agree that it isn't really good TV if everybody dies, right? That would be really depressing. So we wanted to make it like really, really fun. What we do, we can put a lot of cardiac arrest because we can do the CPR thing and everybody's happy. And how many really would resuscitate, would survive after a cardiac arrest? In Grey's Anatomy, 75% would survive. What is it in real life? You are all pneumologists. You know the number. You know the figure. So what happens if somebody that watches a lot of TV would have a parent, a relative, or would hear about a story about someone that went to the hospital or to a doctor, had a cardiac arrest, and died? So what's the problem? The doctor is lousy. or the hospital doesn't know how to resuscitate people. And by the end of the story, they would really love George Clooney in ER, but they will hate all of us. So the mean world syndrome do apply to the medical community. You may argue with me and tell me these are misconceptions. This is not reality, and misconceptions are weak. Let me tell you something. Misconceptions, they are really, really strong, much stronger than you think. And I will try to prove that to you. What did Eve give Adam in the Old Testament? An apple? We all say an apple. Actually, when you go really in the Old Testament, in Latin it's pomus. And pomus in Latin is fruit. And historians, they all say, there's no doubt about it, it was a fig. It was not an apple. But why is it an apple? Because pomus looks like pom. Pom in French means apple. And it was funny to say apple. So everybody knows it's a fig, historians, but we would still think it's an apple. And even after we'll go out from this room, it will still be an apple. One other example, who did say to the French people, if they don't have bread, let them eat cake? It was Marie Antoinette, which she was Louis XVI's wife. She was decapitated during the French Revolution, mainly for that. That's what we all repeat. Actually, that's Rousseau that write down this thing. Rousseau was way before her, and he was talking about Marie-Thérèse, who was Louis XIV's wife, Le Roi Soleil. But it's Marie Antoinette that said this. It suits us, because that's why we killed her. You want more? Cinderella slippers, they were in glass, yes? We all watch all the movies, the remake and remake and re-remake, and the stories we read to our kids. Actually, it's a German story. And the slippers were in Vair, V-A-I-R, meaning fur. But Vair in French, c'est Vair, and somebody didn't know really, or he liked it. He put Vair, so it's a glass, and Disney liked the glass shiny thing. But really, if you go to the real story, Cinderella put these kind of shoes, and that's the kind of shoes that the prince was going from door to door in order to find her. So misconceptions are not weak. Misconceptions are here to stay. And does really these misconceptions apply to the medical influence of dramas? In this study, we see that 67% of daytime drama viewers reported learning something new from this series. Learning is not bad. Is this all? Actually not, because 34% would go and do an action, like would change a habit, would take a medication, would stop a medication. And only 4% of them would go after watching a series to seek a real medical advice. So like 30% of them change a habit without referring to us. Is that all we got about the influence of these series on the medical community? Actually not. This is a question that we all ask ourselves. Why did we become a doctor? And actually, what was really our role model? And this question about the role model were asked to Australians, medical students, and 30% of them are here because the role model they saw in the series. So maybe they are here to be a diagnostician as Dr. House, or they would think that they can be doctors that hate patients. They can be doctors that would really just go and solve cases, and they will be really, really disappointed, and especially the patients would be disappointed. So TV is shaping the medical community. By now, you would think that TV is an aggressive cat. We hate TV, but if you think it's an aggressive cat, wait a bit till you meet the tiger. In the 30s, TV wanted to control people. In the 70s, TV understood that people are influenced by people's interactions. But now, social media is controlling their interactions. Did you know that we were 6 billion in 2000. We will be almost 9 billion in 2050. We have 2.7 billion searches performed on Google each month. The number of text messages exceeds the total population of the planet each day. There were 47 million laptops shipped worldwide last year. That's a funny one. One out of eight couples married this year in US met online. There are over 400 million active gamers worldwide. I'm sure a lot of us, like me, have problems with their kids and their gaming. And I would say all of these are kids, but actually not. The average gamer is 32 years old. Did you know that we have today almost 4 billion internet users, among them 3 billion social media users, that we have each day 5 hours, 19 minutes online, and 1 hour, 36 minutes just on social media? These figures are really rising very fast, and even now they are trying to sell laptops for the very, very, very poor. Did you know that it's estimated that this year we will have 40 exabytes, means 4 times 10 exponent 19 of unique new information this year? Do you know how is this as information? It's as information as we got in the whole past 5,000 years. We have information, exactly the same amount that we will have this only year. It's estimated that if you read just for a week, just for 1 week, New York Times, it contains more information than a person was likely to come across in a lifetime in the 18th century. So we are living in exponential times. What does that mean, really, practically? It means that for students starting a 4-year technical or college degree, what they learn in the first year, half of it is already outdated by their third year. We always used to tell our students that what will today, maybe in 15 years, it would be changed. Actually, in 2 years. That does what does mean to be exponential. Facebook can reach, in 6 months, 50 million users. Radio would have done it in 38 years. Why is that? People trust people more than they trust politicians or they trust doctors. People trust each other. And how would that apply to the social media in healthcare? Why does this matter to us in this conference? I've chosen this publication about the 24 outstanding statistics and figures on how social media has impacted and will still impact the healthcare industry. Before I go further, can you see the number of shares? 2,900 shares of this publication. When I started preparing this conference, I said, where would I have data from? It's not about chronic sinusitis and polyposis. There's no PubMed for me. You will be astonished to see how many literature you have on the literature in the internet just on the topic that I'm handling today. So what are these figures? One, 42% of the guys that goes on internet for health related problems, they are seeking consumer reviews. People trust people. And that's a scary one. 74% of them are just here to have an investigation on a specific doctor or health professional. Scary, no? You have influence of social media on patients that we know from TV. And don't think that social media is just for kids. You have 27.4 million people over the age of 55. And if you wait a bit and you see today people from 18 to 24, how much they are for health-related problems on the internet, they are 90%. So the future number, 27, 30 today, would be 90% there. You know that this guy had a song about his cancer and it reached 10 million views? So how many patients would we see all of us together in all our lifetime? This only guy reached 10 million. And this other guy who survived cancer made it his job to go everywhere around the world to talk about his experience. And he reached millions too. How are the providers, hospitals, and pharma responding? Mayo Clinic is on social media since 2005 and is ranked one of the most social media-friendly hospitals in the U.S. Pharma are maybe a bit less because they have a lot of ethical restrictions, but still, they are online. Where are the physicians in all of this? I know what you're thinking. You're saying, how can I be ethical on Facebook? How can I respect my ethical principle on Facebook? Is it possible? And in order to do so, I tried to find in our code of deontology if we had anything about social media written in it. Certainly not. But we have something called الإعلام الدعائي. لا يجوز استغلال مهنة الطب لغرض تجاري. يحظر على الطبيب اللجوء إلى أساليب الإعلان المباشرة وغير المباشرة. يحظر على الطبيب اللجوء إلى أي تصرف دعائي. So no advertising, but there's really a thin red line between advertising and education. Where is this line? It's really difficult, yeah. It is difficult, it is hard, but quite possible. What do we do when we have a quite hard medical case and that is really, really very frequent? We go to see guidelines. Do we have guidelines on how to use Facebook in medicine? Yes, we do have guidelines. And if you read the guidelines, you will see that it can be ethical to do it. I won't go really in these today. We don't have a lot of time, but there's a lot of what to do and what not to do in using social media online. And this is one example of the guidelines that we say, that we use. If you go today on social media in Lebanon to see what's happening in the medical field, what would you see? You would see things like that. Sometimes you see the doctor injecting the filler with the patient, sometimes the name. You may see that. And sometimes you may see, like, I don't know if my sister is here today. I don't know, maybe, I hope she's not, because it's my mother's Facebook. So my mom, who has three doctors, would post, كوب خطير اشربه بعد الفطور واتركه يذوب دهون البطن والأرداف ويفقدك 7 كيلو في 15 يوم دون تعب. Et pour être plus chic, le concombre peut remplacer 13 médicaments. Ça, c'est un truc qui s'appelle Santé Magazine. Et l'aliment numéro 1 au monde pour lutter contre l'hypertension, le cholestérol et réduire les risques. You would think it's statins. No, it's dates that would do that. I will let you read this. لا يمكنك استعمال الهاتف عند دخول الحمام والسبب. That's what we have on our Facebook media, and we are not doing anything. And what about the world? What about what's happening elsewhere? Today, we have peer-reviewed publication in social media. So you can publish on social media, and there's your peers that can say if you can publish it or if you cannot publish it. One of my friend who happens to be a media whiz, I think he's here, I cannot find him, where's Jad? I asked him yesterday why we have that in Lebanon. And he told me maybe because that's what attracts people. It's not because it's Lebanon. And I went on Facebook pages to see what is the most viewed Facebook page, medical one, worldwide. It's the American Heart Association. Way before the Plastic Surgeon Association. So people would like to hear about heart problems, would like to hear about allergy, about asthma. They are not just here to see about izagru al-ardaf wa kabru al-sidr. If you go to the American, to the Australian Medical Association, they are talking about the vaccines and the autism. You all aware about the controversies, but did you ever see any patient posting about the vaccine? Even Trump is talking about the vaccine, and as Trump would do one time, he said that he is sure that the vaccine would give autism, and 1 month later, he is against the idea. So Trump is in it, and the Lebanese are not into it. What is in Lebanese? وصفة طبيعية للتخلص من الوزن الزائد بسرعة جربيها بنفسك. So yeah, media is a monster. We all know that media is a monster, and we have one of two choices. Choice one. And that reminds me, the secretary in Hotel Dieu who used to work for 30 years in Hotel Dieu. And you know, at some times computers were here. And she was very happy with her typing machine. And they gave her this big typing machine. You remember the big typing machine that would make a line and go back. And she insisted on using the typing machine. And I was so desperate. And I asked her, why would you use a typing machine? And she answered, لك حبيبي, هيدا الكمبيوتر مو داوب تقطع. Plan B, and I would really, really urge you to do it. Urge you to do it as societies. Urge you to do it as hospitals. If you want to go into this dilemma between advertising, societies can do that. The only choice today is to write the monster before it's too late. Because if in 10 years you would ask one of the residents here today to give such a conference, the title won't be the medical profession in the love-hate drama. I can see a title like the medical profession in the artificial intelligence era. Thank you.